So, Brad, tell me about your experience with Pokemon.
The bulk of my Pokemon experience when I was younger was actually just watching my friends play Pokemon on the bus. So I didn't play, I didn't actually have the game, but I was like very invested in watching them play Pokemon. And I didn't ever own a Pokemon game. And my very first Pokemon game was Pokemon Go, which, you know, was that fad for that summer. But somehow I downloaded that game before I knew that it was super popular and everybody knew was playing it. And so I was like really into it. I'm a bit of a nonconformist myself. And so because I had the game before it was this big, huge phenomenon, I was like, I can still play this because I was an early adopter of this game. And so I played Pokemon Go for a long while. And then my first like real Pokemon game that wasn't Pokemon Go was Pokemon Sword and Shield. So it was like way later. But I have really fond memories of playing or watching Quinn and Chase on the bus playing Pokemon. What about you?
Very similar. I didn't really play it. I mean, I was interested, but didn't ever own any of the games. I think I emulated Pokemon Sapphire as an adult. Just put it on my computer. And I think Sapphire and Fire Red are the only two Pokemon games I've actually like played to completion. I feel like it's a meme. Like, I know all about the Pokemon games and how the formula doesn't really change that much. People are really into just all the different Pokemon that come out every, you know, new gen that comes around. And
do you have a favorite Pokemon?
I mean, when I think of Pokemon, the Pokemon I think of, or the two I think of, are Charizard and Blastoise, are like the ones that like. Which is funny because like Pikachu is like the quintessential Pokemon,
right?
But
I think I just think of all the Pokemon in Super Smash Brothers. So the first one being Pikachu, but then I guess Charizard and Blastoise is not, but
Squirtle
is and stuff like that. So the Gen 1 starters, yes, and then Pikachu and then Mewtwo, I think are like. No, that's super basic. Those are the ones that everybody talks about, all the Gen 1 Pokemon. Yeah.
My other experience is watching people pull, like, open Pokemon packs on YouTube. Yep. I've run into that, you know, just that down that hole of people freaking out because they pulled some awesome Charizard. And it's fun just seeing, like, what the price is. You know, they say, yes, you know. Or like people
PSA
getting
10.
People getting cards graded and getting them back and hoping that they get a really good grade. That part is fun. But I'm not like that invested. And then the other aspect is like watching like Nuzlocke challenges.
Oh yeah,
or speed runners.
Watching that stuff.
I really love like Jaden Animations. She does the Nuzlockes, but then makes it into more of a story with her own animation style. And like especially those because they're more quippier and quicker. They're not like you're watching a full run through of the game or watching, you know, someone play it and then. You know, die halfway through and restart. Like, that doesn't.
I want to watch the final product when they have finally overcome all their demons. But it is super interesting watching.
Or, like, the high level strategy of how to.
Yeah.
Because Pokemon is, like, a game that's pretty easy. And if you're having a hard time, you can always grind and overlevel everything and just, you know, wipe the floor of, you know, the people you're fighting against. So when you have self imposed Nuzlocke rules, it makes it more interesting, but it's also, like, I've tried to do a Nuzlocke before on I think it was on Fire Red, and I just like got not that far in and like just didn't catch some Pokemon and then started losing some points. I'm like, I don't want to go release. It's not like it's an honor system type of thing, especially when you're playing by yourself. And I was just like, well, screw this. I'm just going to keep playing and not do that anymore or just turn it off.
Yep. Just quit, start over, or not even start over, but. Welcome to IndieQ. I'm Bradley.
And I'm Paul.
And today we are diving into Cassette Beasts. Paul, do you want to tell us how we got Cassette Beast and what it is?
Okay, so Cassette Beast, I actually got for Christmas for our brother David. And I have hounded him over, hey, have you played it yet? Have you played it yet? And he still hasn't really played it. But both of us,
on
his account, played it a ton. And so I just thought it was funny. It's like, I got this Christmas present for you, for me. Because you're not playing it, but I am.
And Cassette Beasts, we talked about Pokemon, because Cassette Beasts, in a lot of ways, feels very much like Pokemon.
It's a monster collector game where you're battling. I don't think anyone who could play it and not be like, oh, this is definitely inspired by...
Heavily inspired
by Pokemon.
And I know that there was lots of Pokemon clones back in the day. I've never played any of them. And when this came about, it was just like, let's try this indie game. And both of us, because we put a lot of time into it, obviously we really enjoyed playing this game. And so we wanted to put that up in front, is that yes, it is very much like Pokemon, definitely inspired by Pokemon, because a lot of the things that we're going to talk about, Cassette Beasts, are comparing it to Pokemon, which, as you've already heard, we don't have a ton of experience with, but we have, you know, some level of experience with Pokemon and the different challenges that we've had playing Pokemon games in the past. So as we're going through this, we're going to be talking about some of those differences and also the ways that Cassette Beasts sets itself apart from Pokemon. Some of those things are just like quality of life things, but a lot of those things are just interesting things that happen in the game.
Yeah, so I think we should start with just the quality of life aspects that set Cassette Beasts apart, makes it its own thing from Pokemon. And for me, the biggest one is the fact that your character is what is leveling up. It is not the different monsters that you have, which means that you don't have to grind. It's not like if you're playing with your team and you've leveled up your specific team and then you get a new monster to fight with that you have to then go, oh, I have to spend all this time or do XP share, when, you know. I think some of the newer Pokemon games have done a little bit better, but especially the games that we played more were very much like, oh, crap. Whatever. I like this guy, but my team is just better, and I don't feel like taking the time to grind, so I'm not going to play with new Pokemon. And because of that, I felt really compelled to try to catch as many, if not all, of the beasts. Did you feel similarly?
I totally did. I know that people, you know, the tagline of Pokemon, got to catch them all. I never felt that in a Pokemon game, but... Actually, that's not 100% true, because in Pokemon Go, I wanted to catch them all. But in any mainline Pokemon game, I never was, like, compelled to try to catch all the different Pokemon. But I do think that that is a huge aspect of why I was so motivated to actually try to catch every single beast. One of the deviating features, like, even as Paul was saying that, it's you're leveling yourself up. It's called a cassette beast because everything is kind of centered around the cassette tapes. And you have a blank tape that is kind of like your Pokeball. And then you find a monster in the wild and you can record them. So you're not actually catching the actual beast in the wild. You're recording them, and that recording allows you to transform into that beast. So that's kind of how it's structured, instead of being like, oh, I've caught this exact Pokemon out in the wild and now I own that one at whatever level it is. It's you're copying the ability, and the way that the game is set up is you are just kind of dropped on this island and you don't know why you're there, but you have come from a different world. This is a brand new place for your character, and everybody who is in this world was dropped there just like you were, and there's this weird phenomenon that happens with the cassettes, and that's kind of how the game starts.
So you have your companion, and there's multiple companions throughout the game, but you only ever have one that's going with you. So every battle is a dual battle. It's you and your partner, and the beast that you turn into fighting against, you know, the other trainers that you come across, or just beasts in the wild. And much like the later line Pokemon games, you can see the beasts walking around in this like open world, and so you can choose to avoid them or you can choose to go and fight. And I just think it provides a lot more player agency, and when you're battling, and it's not frustrating, you're like, I'm just trying to get to the next spot, and I keep getting all these random encounters, and I really like that aspect. The other thing that is super nice is the fact that when you're trying to capture or record these beasts, the lower their health, the easier it is to capture, which is exactly the same as Pokemon. But if you're attempting to capture them, you can't actually KO them. And so it makes it so that you can make it so they basically have one health point, and then if you succeed in recording them, it then does a like tiny amount of damage. So if they're at one health point, you record them, and then you can finish the battle without having to spend a whole another turn.
Right. when I found that out, it was like, oh, sweet. That was another thing about Pokemon that I never liked, was trying to catch a Pokemon at full health is very difficult, but knowing exactly how to damage them not too much so that they're lower in the lower spectrum of health so that it's easier to catch them, it was just always super annoying to me. So a couple other quality of life things. There are different types, just like in Pokemon. The type advantages, though, aren't necessarily, oh, you know, water beats fire and hits it for double damage or 1.5 damage or whatever. It's different things will happen. Like if the fire Pokemon attacks the poison Pokemon or plastic Pokemon, the plastic Pokemon turns to become a poison type Pokemon. Or why I keep saying Pokemon? They're not Pokemon. But the typing changes. And so there's other things that can happen. But it also shows you visual cues for what happened. So there are certain types that's like, if I attack this type with the type of beast that I am, it will give them extra attack points or action points. Or maybe it will reduce the number. So maybe we can go into the action points.
Yeah, so you basically have a pool of action points that you start off with 2. And you basically get 2 points every turn. And the different moves that your beasts have cost different amounts based off of how strong they are. So, you know, between, you know, 10 and 1. 0. Or 0, yes.
Yeah.
And so you could choose to do weaker moves to bank in the fact that you're gaining 2 action points a turn to then try to use a more powerful move to do a bunch of damage or give a big buff. And then the other fun component of it is that you can merge your beasts at certain points in time. This meter that if you fill up, every single combination of beasts has a unique merge. They're not like crazy, crazy different. You know, if you have the same one, you swap out different, it's a secondary, you see, oh, there's variations of this type.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like that. That'd be way too much work if it was like completely unique for every single combination. So that's a ridiculous amount of combinations. But they're more powerful. You get 4 AP a turn instead of just 2. So you're able to use some of your more powerful moves. And it also gets really interesting when you start fighting against these fused monsters in the wild, where they are the combination of 2 different ones. Or if you're fighting trainers who have the combination of 2 different beasts, and all of a sudden you're just like getting these big battles where you're just swinging hard at one another. And another really cool aspect of the game is the fact that you have your own health pool, and then each of the monsters have a health pool. And if the monster health pool ever gets depleted, the monster, you revert to yourself, but they could continue to attack you that turn because there's 2 monsters on the other team. And so if your health or your partner's health drops to 0, even if you have more monsters to transform to in your pool, your person's passed out. You can't transform into something when you're, you know, knocked unconscious. And so then you only have one beast to fight, even if it was the very first beast in your team to get knocked out. You have 5 other beasts to use, but you can only use one of the 2 slots that you have. And so it's kind of this cool figuring out how to balance your defense. And like when you are trying to record beasts, you are in your just regular human form, and you can take damage that will make it so that your character gets knocked out. So there's a lot of fun finagling that is able to take place.
Yeah, and I definitely took advantage of the fact that when you're fighting like a trainer, like if you could knock them all the way out, they won't be able to bring out their future cassettes either. And so like you can definitely do that in the other direction. It's not only hurting you. You can utilize that to your own advantage. One of the, I think, coolest aspects of Pokemon is when Pokemon evolve into a new Pokemon. And Cassette Beast definitely has that. They call it
Remix.
Remixing it. So it's like you have leveled up. So we mentioned that you really are leveling yourself up.
That's stat-wise.
Stat-wise. But when you are fighting with an individual Cassette, the monster that you have recorded, you gain stars. And each time that you gain a star, it's like experience, but each time you gain a star, your beast will learn a new move. And when it gets to 5 stars, if it has the ability to remix, you can take it to like a campfire are, and then it will remix into the next level, the next evolution.
And my favorite ones were the ones that when you go to remix it, it asks you a question. And you, depending on what your answer to the question is, it remixes it a certain way. Which then you're like, oh, I have to go catch another one of those same beasts so that I can go remix it and answer the other question to see the different forms that it could take. And your starters, they have multiple branching paths. So you have your first remix has a branching path, and then each of those branching paths have another branching path. So later in the game, you're able to find more of the starters that, and then be able to split it up into, you know, four different final forms for each one.
Do they each have four final forms? I think they...
Yeah.
Really? I only had two in my head, but maybe there is four. I think I know what's going on, but yeah. Anyways, keep going from there. The evolutions, the remixing though, I think they do a really cool job of having the star method of you have level up your beast and then that's when you evolve it instead of it being like, oh, it needs to get to a certain level.
Which incentivized me to always be swapping out my team because I'm wanting to get them to 5 stars so I can remix to see as many different beasts as possible.
Yes. One of the other things, there's so many different things that they have in this game, but that I think allows you to specialize in the way that you would like to specialize is that there's like a gym in the game and you can go in and adjust your individual stats. So like you could do a melee attack or a ranged attack or your hit points or your defense, your ranged defense and your melee defense. And so you can adjust those and you'd be like pull away.
Yeah, I maxed out my melee and had low stats on basically everything else. You did range.
Right? And I maxed out range. So I was super fragile, like as the main protagonist character. I had super low hit points, not very good defense, but I had high speed, so I could go before other people and hopefully KO them in one turn.
Glass cannon.
Yes.
Which is fun.
And it worked great for most of it, but once you get to like the boss battles or whatever, the bigger things, you can't kill them in one turn. And it was like, okay, I need to figure out a different way than just going guns blazes every time when I'm getting to those harder battles. So we've been talking about just really the different mechanics of the game. How did you feel playing this game? What was your experience playing?
So I think one thing, it's themed around this cassette tape. And so they have some indie music playing in the background, of which I am a huge indie music fan. So like when you're in like the main like coffee shop or your like hangout area, there's this song that's going on. I remember I really liked the song, but I remember you pointed out it's the only song like that actually has lyrics in the game. Whereas it gets a little bit old, and I would have really liked if there was like a larger selection of a playlist. I know it's an indie studio. It's probably I feel like the game is really good and could have a sequel. And I that's one thing I definitely would want in a sequel is to have more music. Because the music that was there, very good, but the variety is very much lacking. But it's a very joyous experience. The exploration was very fun. It wasn't super hand-holdy, and I liked that in the sense of like, normally it's Pokemon games, you go to a gym and you fight the trainers and the gym leader. Where this game is like, hey, there's a gym leader somewhere in this region. Cool. You need to find it. And so there's a lot of exploration and like overworld puzzles that aren't like crazy hard, but it felt very open. You could go to the super hard levels right away, fight against crazy be way under leveled. The game would say, hey, you can go here, but just so you know,
you're going to get schmeckled.
Unless you're playing perfect, which I think provides a cool challenge of like, hey, what's the earliest I can go to these levels? Provides that aspect of mastery.
Mm-hmm.
The characters were all right. I don't know about you, but I didn't really connect that much with any of them. As you like have someone as your partner, the more you play with them, you have you unlock dialogue with them, learn more about them, and each of them have like a side quest mission.
And you're talking about like the other human character. I guess yes. They're not all human, but the other character that you're who is also recording monsters with you, essentially.
Correct. I feel like not that Pokemon's a great story, but the story is not the reason you play the game. It's very much a
background thing.
A collection of getting these monsters and the intricacies of the combat system.
Yeah. I was definitely, I think the thing that kind of kept me coming back to the game was more the filling out all of the different Pokemon. All the different beasts, try to catch them all. There was some element of like, yeah, I'm going to progress the story and get to the end, but I was definitely more drawn back into the game because I wanted to find all the different beasts that were out there.
And I think also does a really good job of having like a quest log and then like the rumors when you talk to different NPCs, and that gives you a general idea of like, hey, look in this region, and it, on the map shows up, you know, where you can go to try to finish that quest. And I think having that markers, I remember being younger and seeing people play or like getting to play for a little bit of Pokemon and feeling really lost of like, you need to go to the next gym, but where's that? It's not super clear. And so I think it did a really good mix of progressing you with like, hey, this is what you should be trying to do, and this is the area that you need to go to do it, but we're not going to like just have a way marker that you can just go exactly to the point where you need to be to then fight the person.
Gives you general ideas of what to do and where to go.
Yes.
So, yeah. Was there a specific beast that you, like, was your favorite one to play with as you were going through the game? Or did you really just cycle through them all?
I cycled through most of them. There's a couple that were just, it suited my, I don't know if the beasts were that perfect of the beast. I don't even know how to describe it. It was a guy, a tall, like, ninja guy in a trench coat.
Okay.
That I played as, and I had a like a passive ability where immediately upon starting a battle, you do an attack. And I just, like I said, I had my melee attack all the way up, and he was pretty good at melee, so I could KO a lot of the beasts without actually doing anything. And so it was a really nice way to put on the team all the people that I'm trying to level up, and then I'd have two people. Him and I had a bootleg.
We haven't talked about that yet.
Serpent, big dragon guy, and they would both. I would just like just KO and then just be able to level up really fast.
So bootleg is kind of because that means a version of shiny Pokemon, but they're different in the fact that instead of just being a different skin and looking different, they have a different type. They have a different typing. And so all the different typings, like each individual beast could be bootlegged to
every other typing,
and they look different. There's actually a typing in the game called Glitter. And when Glitter is in play, if somebody gets hit by a Glitter move, the next move that they get hit by will change their typing to that. So you can pretty easily, with someone that has Glitter, see all the different like color palette swaps that each individual beast could have.
This is like one of the top level bosses. That's his strategy, is he combos Glitter and Glass. And Glass is super fragile, so he glitters you, and then he makes all your typings glass, and then he does moves that shatter glass, even if you don't lose all your HP. And it's annoying. But I think it does a cool job of teaching you, like, hey, there's cool combinations that you might not have thought of right off the bat that you can utilize.
So, yeah, I ended up finding two like bootlegged beasts, and one of them was the one that I stuck with the whole time. I think it's naturally like a metal type, but it was water, and it was like a super duper high ranged attack. When I was like, oh, this is my guy. It's kind of sad because it doesn't look that cool. It's kind of like this octopus looking like
alien
thing. And so every single time that I would do a fuse, it would just look like the exact same like bottom half of these alien arms, and then just like a slightly different colored.
Yeah, my guy was different things and a big trench coat with like stick legs at the bottom. So it's just a different colored creature in a trench coat over and over again for my fuses.
Yeah. So anyways, it's kind of funny how we had our main guy that kind of just everybody swapped around them. And that's how I leveled up my guys too, as well, in order to
like. I didn't do them for the whole game, but I've said the majority of the game, I definitely did.
Yeah. So, I guess there's a lot of things we could talk about. There's so many, like, little details. I'm maybe getting lost in it too much. But I guess something that I think is interesting for us to talk about that's not necessarily specifically Cassette Beast, but it's related to it. It's like we mentioned, your goal when you step onto this island is you're trying to get back to your old life. And the game never really goes into what your old life was because you're the blank slate.
Protagonist doesn't have any dialogue, so you're supposed to put yourself in the shoes, I think, is the intention.
And pretty much from the very beginning of the game, your goal is, how can I get back? How do I escape this island that is not where I'm from? So
is everyone else around you. And you're, like, all from different, like, multiverse worlds. And so all of the characters that are your partners all are from different worlds that have different histories or different time frames or from different time periods. So you're all unified in your goal is, as you're growing closer together through the dialogue and the things that you're doing, your goal is to go back to each of your individual worlds and never see each other again.
Yeah. Which is a weird aspect, but I know you were sharing some stuff about just how games are similar.
Yeah, I thought it was, I don't know if this was the intended message of the game, but it really made me think of, so when you finish the game, you go back to your own world, and the game is over, you get credits, and you basically put the game down. And I really feel like that's an analogy to, like, gaming itself of, hey, you're in this world, you're making, you know, these quote-unquote relationships with these people, you're having this adventure, you're feeling like you're achieving stuff, but it's in this world that's not actually real life. It's this, you know, screen that you're going into. And then when you go back to, you know, the real world, when you beat the game and you are, you know, freed to back to your life, none of the relationships that you made in the game exist. You don't have anything to really show for it. All the achievements and the skills that you unlocked, for the most part, don't apply at all to your life. I think it's a very interesting, like, tension to feel of, like, enjoying playing games, and, like, we're recommending games, but then the theme of the game is also, like, hey, it matters, but it's not real life. Go experience real life, but in experiencing real life, you're not necessarily playing the solo game by yourself for hours and hours. And it's just really this tension that I wrestle with.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this question of, like, what is truly important in life, I think rubs off of what you're saying. Like, what are we doing that is important? What are we doing that is just kind of throwaway? And am I spending all my time in the throwaway? Or am I spending my time in something that actually matters? And I think that that's a good question that you could probably sit down and just be thinking about for a big chunk of your life. So one of the things that I was recently talking with my wife about, of just, like, what is important. So we were talking about, like, we were talking about finances and all these different things. And one of the things that's really important to both me and Paul is that, like, look, we're really strong Christians. And what is the most important thing? It was like, man, I value other people understanding who Jesus is more than I value, like, me being healthy. And I was having a conversation about that. And it's, like, kind of weird to think. Like, that is not the way that most people process the world. And I was even thinking about it. I there are people that I know who I, like, care about a lot, who are even in our family, who aren't following after Jesus. And I was like, if I died today and knew that they would come and know
as Jesus, a result of that,
it would be worth it to me. And, like, that is, like, crazy. But, like, what is most important to me? Somebody's eternity. Like, I truly believe that what the Bible says is true. And that's kind of crazy, I think, for a lot of people here.
Yeah, and then you're also juxtaposing, like, wow, this is the most important thing. I need to be doing that all the time with, I've been playing this game that's super fun, and I'm getting lost in this world, but I'm not actually advancing this thing that I say is my most important goal, while also knowing I can't do that literally all the time. Right. Of being evangelizing or having these deep conversations or serving or just being with people. And there are times where you do need to decompress and have like this, ability to explore this other world that's, on a screen and in your head. And that's important, but it's, you can get lost in that. And then all of a sudden your goals or your thoughts are focused on, I want to do this stuff in the game. Mm-hmm. I'm at work, but I'm thinking about, when I'm done with work, I'm going to play this game and I'm going to do this cool thing. That's like, it can become easily become an obsession.
Yeah.
Which is like, when you're obsessed about a game, that is a testament to some degree of, that must be a pretty good game. Juggling all of that aspects is just really confusing to me. We've talked about it in previous podcasts about just like how technology and entertainment can be like a way to self-medicate for just being frustrated with life and stuff. And for both of us, for a while, we got rid of our smartphones. I still don't have one, and I just have noticed that draw to lose myself in that, especially like when I'm with my kids, for me is basically gone, which is super wonderful. I hated having that tension of like, I want to be with my kids, but I want to watch a video on my phone, but I don't want to be the parent who's always watching videos on their phones because I want to model healthy behavior to my kids and I want to spend time with them because they're only this age for so long. And none of that is like explicit in this game, but there is that underlying tension of what is your reality? What is the world that you're in? And finding joy in the escapism, but also knowing that at some point you do have to end your time in the game and have it finish. I think that's kind of a cool, I don't think it's an in your face or front. I think you very easily play this game and not even.
I think we're weird, Paul. We talk about these weird things because they matter to us. And we see those things in different media or these games. Like that's just the stuff that comes out to us. I don't think anybody who developed this game was thinking about that aspect of it. But they were talking about, this other world is kind of an interesting thing to think about. And that's the direction that they went.
Yeah.
And so, but I think these conversations are so much more meaningful than just like the color of the way that it looks. We didn't even talk about any of those things in the game.
Yeah. But I think it's cool that you could create something without the intention and still have this really meaningful theme or message that people latch onto, even if it's not what you intended.
Yeah.
I think that art is really cool in that way, of that the people engaging with it create the meaning alongside with the creators of the art. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like this
inspiration circle.
Yes. So, but back to the queue. I think we still need to place. Is there more you want to talk about before we get into placement of the game?
I don't think there's anything, like there's lots of things we could still talk about, but I don't think that it's necessarily worth delving into any more than we already have. So I'm fine with jumping into trying to rank this. And again, like we mentioned last episode, we really have four different pools that each game could land in, and that's kind of how we're going to divvy them up into these four areas. The first one being skip the line. The second one to cut ahead of the line but not jump to the very beginning. The third one being waiting your turn. And the last one being at the end of the line. And so do you have one of those four pools that you are feeling like this should be in?
I am feeling kind of in between two.
Okay, which two?
I want to hear what your thoughts are.
My gut reaction is to put it in wait your turn.
Well, I am way more high on this. I am actually feeling between skip the line and cut ahead.
Really? Okay.
I really liked this game, which is, I've never been like a crazy huge Pokemon player, but this one just hit me different, and I love the aesthetic. I love the like the music part of it, and I think the gameplay is fun, and it just allows for a lot of different customization, especially in like the New Game Plus, where you can do like Nuzlockes, and you can do randomize starters, and you can do randomized types for everyone. So basically every monster is a bootleg just naturally in the world. You can randomize what areas they're in. And you can do a lot of that stuff in Pokemon, but you have to mod it. This is just straight up. We know people like to do this in Pokemon games, so we're just going to make it super easy to do it in our game.
You could tell that the people who developed this game were well acquainted with the way that people mod Pokemon games.
Yes. And so I just think, oh, that's super cool. Because it's like, I've never played Nuzlocke faithfully, but I would consider trying the Nuzlocke setting and get a game over and be like, oh,
yeah,
well, that's that.
And if for anybody who's like, we've said the word Nuzlocke about 15 times in this podcast, essentially means when your monster dies, it's permanently dead.
As opposed to being able to regenerate.
Where in these games, they can die and then you go take them back and you heal them up back. So that's what one of the aspects of Nuzlocke. There's other things as well, but that's like kind of the main feature of a Nuzlocke. So if you're like, I don't know what that means, that's what it means.
But it hit me really. Like, I think this is like a top tier game. So that's why I was in that area.
I think that part of the reason why I said, wait your turn, is talked about Chance of Sinnar.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, they're in the same, a similar level of like enjoyment that I had with the game. And so we just put Chance of Sinnar into the wait your turn, which is probably why that drew me there. So, but you're like way higher. You're like in between, like maybe a top three game, kind of top three or four.
It would not beat the top three currently, but I think in my opinion, it is of a similar quality. I mean, obviously it is a game that is heavily inspired by Pokemon, which is basically a genre in and of itself. And, you know, but I guess Hollow Knight is a Metroidvania, Hades is a roguelike, Celeste is a platformer, so it's not like any of them are just like out of the blue, this whole new genre. But I just feel like it is top of its game. Like Pokemon, one of the things it's known for is not innovating, and how games graphically don't look much better. The gameplay is very similar. The big difference is that you get different Pokemon,
and they usually have some gimmick in each game.
And I just feel like this is an indie game that, you know, I would rather play. I'd be way more excited for a Cassette Beasts 2 than any new mainline Pokemon game. And I think I feel like with a low budget small team can blow out the studio that does the
biggest
genre is known for, and it's like, to me, it's not even close. That being said, I have not played all of the Pokemon games, so I'm sure that Pokemon fans could have a lot of pushback to that, but I think it's a game, if you like Pokemon, it's for sure, there's no doubt, you need to buy this game and play it. It's not expensive, it's like $20, and it's just really, really high quality.
And I definitely very much enjoyed this game, I've never sunk my teeth into a Pokemon game the way that I sunk my teeth into Cassette Beasts.
And I think that is a testament to it. Of like, this is not our cup of tea. Neither one of us, this is like kind of games that we go out our way to look for. And the fact that both of us just sunk in a ton of hours, I think you caught every single beast.
I think there's one that I didn't, but yeah, like almost every single one.
And you'd never do that in a Pokemon game.
Never.
And you'd lose interest, or maybe you'd finish the story. I know both of us got to the point where we could finish the story, but we wanted to do all of the extra side stuff before
we finished the story.
And I just...
Yeah, based on kind of your reaction, I think it's probably almost certainly going to land in the...
Cut ahead.
Yeah, this is going to cut ahead of a lot of games.
I feel like because I was at the... Cut ahead to skip the line, and you were in wait your turn. I think cut ahead is the zone
where it's gonna land.
The landing zone. The question then becomes, where does it fall?
Okay, I think we walk down the line.
Okay.
From the top. So, the top of cut ahead is Slay the Spire, and I really don't think... Slay the Spire, I feel like, is still kicking for me. Recently, I was just like, I'm going to play a game, and I wanted to play Slay the Spire. I would want to put... Cassette Beasts below Slay the Spire. I think the top couple ones here, I'm like definitely feeling like it would feel very weird for me to put Cassette Beast above Slay the Spire,
then Stardew Valley,
Dead Cells. And then I think we can start, like, I would start having conversations from the Towerfall down spot.
Yeah.
What is your reaction to my...
So, I think if you've listened to the podcast, you know my feelings on Stardew Valley is a game I want to love, but it haven't hit me right. But I see the beauty of it. I really think it should go above Dead Cells, to be honest with you. I think Dead Cells is fun, but I don't think it does anything super crazy unique. It's one of those games where the further I'm removed from it, it just doesn't have that, like, fondness that I'm looking back. Like, I can look back, and I every once in a while, I'm like, I just want to play Slay the Spire. It's a perfect game to just play, like, a run. I never feel like, oh, I should just do one Dead Cells run.
And I think I sometimes do feel that way, so that's probably why I'm like, I would even, like, wanting to bump the Dead Cells above Cassette Beast. But, like, as you're saying that, I definitely, can I put my foot down? I don't want it to go above Stardew Valley.
No, I was conceding that already. Yeah. I think that, for what it is, Stardew Valley is just amazing, especially only being made by one person.
Which is crazy. So, that's, I guess, the highest I could see myself allowing it to go with 6. What is the lowest you could see yourself allowing it to go?
I think the lowest I could see it going is 8 above Forgotten City.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely feel fine with putting it above Forgotten City, for sure. And so then the conversation is just Cassette Beasts, Dead Cells, Towerfall.
Towerfall is this chaotic multiplayer goodness. So, but it's so dependent on having that group to come together and play and like that.
You mentioned that Cassette Beast has this, like, very happy aesthetic, just like you're going out and conquering the world, kind of, and go do it.
Happy soundtrack. And the sound design of Towerfall, the word I would use is dour. It's got this, like, wah, 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 wah. And then frantic music just, like, going on, and then you die. And it's like, whoa.
Mm-hmm. So I was actually going to say, like, there's that happiness, like, joyful, go
do explore the things that you're going succeed. To
do. Yeah, that feeling. So there's that aspect of Cassette Beast. I'm trying to, like, compare the way that you feel when you play Cassette Beast versus the way that you feel when you play Towerfall. Because to me, Towerfall is, even though it has maybe that more, like, you said the word dour, which is a word that I usually wouldn't use, but I think it's a good word for it. Like, dour soundtrack, but the emotions that it elicits are so joyous and, like, crazy and...
It's very swingy. Very high highs and very low lows. And it's quick, but, like, I know, like, our sister Abby gets really frustrated by it. And doesn't enjoy, even though it's that group dynamic. And it's not like you have to have a crazy high skill ceiling. So it's like she can win games, but she feels like it when she does win, it wasn't like she got lucky more so than like she did something cool. And I even feel that sometimes where you're just like, I don't know how that worked out, but it's cool. And you can cheer because you got that stand-up moment. Yeah. I think I would fight for it to be above Towerfall. The question is does it go above or below Dead Cells?
So I think that it's funny because I'm like, you're convincing me, or not necessarily that I agree with you, but the way that you're thinking makes a lot of sense to me. So like Dead Cells being a roguelike game where it's like that loop. I played that loop way more times than you've played that loop.
This is true.
And so, like, and I've played that loop so many times, I haven't even, like, I know that there are, like, bosses beyond what I'm capable of doing that I've still never beaten. Because they're locked behind. You need to get through the whole game at a certain level in order to even get to them to fight them. And I have not done that. I've kind of capped out my ability, though. It's a game that has... the ability ceiling is higher than I'm capable of getting to at this point. But it's still a game that, like, I think back to, and it's like, oh, it's so exciting when I was able to go to the next level and beat the next thing. Whereas I think Cassette Beasts is just a very, very well-made Pokemon clone.
But I vibe so hard with it. The vibe is just, it's good. So how are we deciding this?
Do you think it needs to be above Dead Cells? Or do you, based on what I just said, would you put it below?
To be honest, the explanation you just gave did not convince me that it should go below it. The fact that there is such a high skill ceiling, I would say you're someone who's pretty darn good at video games, and you just, like, there's only, like, the top... It's cool. There's a cool thing. It's like, this game is not so crazy hard that you can never beat the first level, but if you want to see all that it has, you have to be just a god gamer. There's a degree of, like, that's cool. But most people aren't going to experience that. Whereas, I feel like there is the accessibility and just the taking a tried and true formula, innovating slightly, and then just making everything just happier to go about doing it. And I just think is really cool. And it's something that I want to reward on our little list that not that many people listen to.
All right, that works for me. So that means that Cassette Beast slots itself in at number 6, right below Stardew Valley and right above Dead Cells. It's an honor to do this with you, Paul.
This is Ben, IndieQ.